Welcome to the DLA Piper Media Sport and Entertainment Podcast. In this series, we explore the latest trends and challenges facing businesses today and how we must evolve to meet them both in the short and longer term. Each episode, our leading lawyers and guest speakers from across the worlds of media, sport and entertainment discuss market and legal insight on a wide range of issues. We will take a deeper dive into these topics at our MSE Summit later this year. We encourage you to register for the summit by visiting www.dlapiper.com/MSE Summit.
Hello, I'm Ryan Black, a partner at DLA Piper in the Vancouver office in Canada, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by colleagues who, like me, are members of the media, sport, and entertainment team. They're both based out of the Los Angeles Century City office. So I'll start by introducing Tom Ara, who is the co-chair of our entertainment transactions and finance practice. Hi, Tom. Do you want to say a little bit about what it is you do down there?
Sure. So as you stated, I co-lead the sports media and entertainment practice group based here in Los Angeles. Our group is really a full service group covering all of those three areas and disciplines. And we are a group that really covers not just the disciplines, but geographically a large area throughout the world. And there are a number of other practitioners like yourself who cross over with our practice in various areas, including video games and technological advances in the space, which I'm sure we'll talk more about during this podcast.
And of course, joining you is Catherine Imp, who's a senior associate in your practice. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So you work with Tom doing similar things, and you know we'll be talking about the metaverse today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice in this area?
Yeah. So, you know, my background is in production. And so after being in the trenches of learning about, you know, how to make film and TV content, being at a place like DLA, I've been able to take that subject matter expertise. And as Tom was saying, we get to apply it to kind of different areas, whether it's technology, employment, corporate. And one of the most interesting, I would say, ways that we've been able to apply our subject matter expertise is in the world of technology, specifically in the metaverse, NFTs, and the like. So I'm excited to talk more about that today with all of you.
Yes, I agree. So I myself practice almost exclusively with video game companies in the kind of commercial sense. Up in Canada, it's interesting. In the United States, I find that the video game world and the entertainment world crossed over a lot earlier. In Canada, it seems like all the video game lawyers are all kind of former tech lawyers like me. And so it's really interesting to see the video game metaverse kind of video game slash metaverse. They're definitely not the same thing. It's interesting to see them merge the technology and entertainment practices together. I've been a gamer since I was 5 years old, and so that's more than 40 years, and I've been on the internet since about 1986, so for those of you wondering, my parents were very, very permissive. In a lot of ways, when we talk about the metaverse, which is the main topic of our conversation today, it feels to me like the metaverse is like a continuation of just having a digital online presence that resonates with the user. So, you know, I remember having, you know, an avatar online in some of my kind of early entertainment experiences or in some of my early online social media experiences. And in a lot of ways, the metaverse kind of continues that. And it feels like we're at the beginning of something rather than something we can fully define. So I thought we'd start by just talking a little bit about, you know, what is the metaverse? And maybe Tom, I'll start with you. When you hear the clients and people in the industry talking about the metaverse, what is it they're talking about?
Okay, well, good way to start, I think. I think the first thing to know about it, at least at this stage of the world, is that the metaverse is not unitary at this point. It describes a number of different experiences. Of course, it's possible that this concept of the metaverse becomes unitary because one or more companies or participants is able to create an experience that is all-encompassing and is a place where the vast majority of the population participates. But at this stage, that is not the case. So some people, when they hear the word metaverse, they think it's just one thing or one place, and it isn't at this point. It's also, I think, as you described, it is a continuation of the digital experience or online experience. And this is why we describe it as Web 3.0. And just for context, Web 1.0 is described by most people as basically the first stage of internet evolution, where basically you're a consumer of content. In the Web 2.0 scenario, basically the paradigm we currently live in, a user would interact with the internet to create and share content, and that's mostly what we do today using social video or media apps and the like. What Web 3.0 is and does is really adds a disintermediation component, or removing intermediaries, so social video platforms or distributors or anything else that you have to use at this point to share those experiences. And the idea is to decentralize that experience and give the user a lot of control over their experience on the internet. So in sum, the metaverse concept is a Web 3.0 concept, Ryan.
Yeah, I hear a lot about Web 3.0 and the decentralization. I kind of feel like we're still going through the throes of Web 2.0. And certainly there are some businesses out there that are still operating in the 1.0 world. But that's very interesting to me that kind of decentralization and metaverse is happening at the same time. It seems like there's a lot of kind of investment that is required to make the metaverse happen. And the kind of collective and individual efforts of a number of organizations will be required to make it happen. Kate, turning to you, you know, speaking about the metaverse very generally and thinking about the work you've done, what sorts of things have you seen the metaverse kind of come to mean in your practice?
Yeah, so, you know, I think to take a step back, for me, I'm not a gamer. And, you know, as I started to learn about the metaverse, to me, it was a new form of communication, a way to really connect in a new way with people all around the world. And I think that's what we're starting to see in our practice, specifically using it in a few different ways, right? So the obvious one, especially with us in our entertainment group, is using the metaverse as a new form of entertainment, right? And so, you know, where we used to only go to, for example, go to concerts in person, well, now with the metaverse expanding, there's ways to go to see perhaps your favorite artist virtually, right? In a room full of other folks that are there virtually. So I think we're going to see more of that in the entertainment space. But then we're also seeing this, you know, as a new kind of opportunity for commerce, right? So, you know, back in the day when folks used to go to a store to go purchase goods, we have since transitioned to doing that on the internet. But I think this Web 3.0 offers a new opportunity to not just shop, but for brands and companies to advertise, you know, their products and services in a new way and engage folks. So it's not just about, okay, here's our product and here's a place to purchase, but here's a way to interact with us and be engaged in a new way. And I think that's what Web 3.0 offers us and the direction that I see the metaverse going.
Yeah, it's really interesting you talk about that. You know, I think about, you know, in my video game practice, some of the kind of early forays where I kind of started to see the metaverse start to emerge. And I think of, for example, Epic Games' Fortnite product, where inside of the game, they would hold concerts or release trailers to movies. And players inside of the game who are obviously very invested in their characters, you know, they're kind of living their online life in the Fortnite universe. You know, they would be, you know, playing their game and all of a sudden the sky would go dark and a Star Destroyer would fly across the screen and the Imperial March would play. And all of a sudden, here's a Star Wars trailer launching in the middle of your game as kind of like an event that everyone in the game kind of experiences. And I think about how, you know, that's kind of a very early stage version. I mean, obviously, that's a fairly limited ecosystem, but one that's growing. And then when you talk about consumer content, you know, back in the Web 2.0 days, everyone kind of differentiated between the website's content and user-generated content. That was the big divide. And what I'm seeing now in the metaverse is this idea that user-generated content is the content and that it really is about that kind of engagement by the consumers with the brands. And so, you know, we're seeing that certainly on social media.
That's right.
You know,
and, you know, there's even an extension of what we're doing now, right? You know, in terms of the pandemic and all of us finding ourselves working from home, I think that's another place where we can see what the metaverse might look like in the future, that we take this kind of virtual work environment, this virtual education system for folks that are still in school. And it starts to become something more complex, right? Where rather than us speaking perhaps on just a recording, instead, you know, we may be in a virtual conference room with avatars and talking or participating in a seminar. So there's just so many different ways that I could see this going. And I think it's exciting, right, to think about all the different uses.
And I think to pick up on that point about the impact of the pandemic, I think it did have a paradigm shifting effect on adoption of Web 3.0 and the metaverse. If you think about pre-pandemic and the acceptance or adoption of video conferencing, we all had Skype on our phones and our computers. How often did we really use it for business or other types of interactions? Rarely, unless maybe it was a international meeting or call and the parties couldn't be in the same room. But in reality now, sometimes we're in the same office and we're Zooming or doing some other form of Teamsing or whatever it may be. And so I think the adoption, broad adoption of a virtual interaction, as simple as a video conference, I think has laid the foundation in a big way for what will be the broader metaverse experience.
So, you know, I'd be remiss with a group of lawyers on this call here. I'd remiss, you know, we're talking a lot about kind of high level metaverse topics, but maybe we should maybe talk a little bit about the legal implications of all this, because we can certainly leave the technical side of what the metaverse will become to the kind of brilliant engineers and computer scientists that are working on that. But seeing as, you know, not to toot our own horns, seeing as we have some brilliant lawyers on the call, you know, I thought I'd talk a little bit about, you know, the law kind of often plays catch up to technology. And I think a lot of people, you know, particularly in the business world, may think that that creates kind of a wild west where there's no law that applies. But in fact, what typically happens is old or unintended laws apply to all these new technologies. So when we talk about the metaverse, I mean, I think immediately what comes to mind are issues like, you know, intellectual property regulation, gambling, that sort of thing. But turning it over, Kate and Tom, to you, when you think, you know, IP in the metaverse sounds like a really fraught topic to at least this lawyer. What are your thoughts on intellectual property?
Let me begin by saying I want to dispel a myth or a misnomer maybe about metaverse and decentralization. And I'm going to make up some words because that's what we do when we go into the metaverse, right? So decentralization does not mean de-legalization. There is law in the metaverse. There is law persists as long as there are people on the physical planet who participate in the metaverse. Laws will apply in your particular jurisdiction. They may be different, but that is one, I think, one major myth or misnomer about the metaverse, that you can go there and use whoever's content that you want or do whatever you want, and it's decentralized and it's basically the wild, wild west of those types of things. And it is not. There are regulatory, legal implications. I mean, all of the things that exist in the real world exist there in terms of complying with laws and regulations. So as we continue this discussion on applicable laws, I want to make sure our listeners understand that, because it would be a dangerous path to take if you think you can go into the metaverse and disregard the legal structure that our nations have put in place.
Well, for sure, if you think about, you know, kind of the growing pains that the cryptocurrency went through, kind of realizing that they weren't necessarily in the free to operate and do whatever they want space, but maybe in the securities and tax and legal regimes of all the different jurisdictions of the world where they were, you know, offering coins and things like that. I think, you know, as that's an early Web 3.0 concept, very quickly learned that the laws definitely apply to them.
Correct.
Yeah, you know.
So maybe, Kate, I was just going to say maybe on the IP side.
Yeah, I was going to just kind of jump in and add to what you and Tom were discussing. When you're thinking about the metaverse and what legal issues could arise, you know, you almost want to take a step back and think about, okay, well, what am I using in here, right? Am I using a photograph? Am I using a video? Am I using somebody's trademark, right? A logo or a slogan? These types of things we would think about outside of the metaverse, right? We would think about in the physical world if you were going to use somebody else's content. And so simply because we're in the digital world, that doesn't mean that you don't have to think about these things, right? And so when it comes to intellectual property specifically, you want to think about whether the kind of things that you're using, whether you're the platform, that you own the platform, you're the one that's creating it, or that you're the one that is kind of immersed and interacting in a particular platform, think about who are the rights holders. And if it's not you, then likely there's some license that will need to be put in place. And so these are the types of things that we really kind of work through with our clients, is thinking about what licenses to put in place when certain copyrighted works are being used or certain trademarks are being used, and how expansive or limited, right, is that license? Because when you think about something, for example, music, and using music as part of a commercial, you would be licensing that music just for that commercial, right? And you wouldn't be able to use that music for anything else. So the same thing kind of applies here, is if you're using these kind of third-party works, think about how it's being used and what the scope of that license is, and then making sure that you and that rights holder negotiate and put it down on paper to make sure you are on the same page.
I think the big question really is going to be, we know that laws will apply, but will our existing legal schemes apply in the same fashion? And I think those are some of the more difficult questions to answer. Things like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which many platforms of various types, United States, reap the benefit of when it comes to infringing content and safe harbor type provisions, and how will those apply in the context of a metaverse, or Section 230 of the Decency Act, so, and in other jurisdictions, comparable laws. And I think that is where, for lawyers, it's a bit of the Full Employment Act of sorts. We have to interpret these and work with clients to help navigate them, and it will ultimately fall on the shoulders of lawmakers to potentially modify and amend those laws to work better in the metaverse.
Sure. And, you know, I think, thinking of the metaverse as a continuation of kind of existing internet technologies, existing digital experiences, you know, I think of, for example, just on the e-commerce side, and I run into this in video games and e-commerce clients all the time, just how easy it is to cross international borders and end up in the jurisdiction of someone else's lawmaking. That's, you know, probably even more important in the metaverse, where, you know, I can be in, you know, in some online experience and not realize that I'm standing next to someone who's logged in from Germany or someone who's logged in from another place. And I know, for example, that, you know, kind of during this kind of tragic Ukraine situation we're seeing unfold, I know that a lot of people in the e-commerce space have suddenly had to grapple with the fact that they have to worry about, you know, doing business with people who are sanctioned, for example, or money laundering concerns or criminal laws or things like that. And seeing how all this will apply in the metaverse is actually going to be a very tricky thing. It's not only going to require kind of local regulators, but it's going to probably require some sort of international cooperation.
Agreed.
That's right.
Agreed. Absolutely.
So, you know, it's an interesting thing. You know, the other thing we see in the gaming space a lot is just how the consumer experience is driving a lot of what's happening in kind of these digital experiences. So, you know, I think, for example, about the traditional VR, I have to confess, I'm an early adopter of VR. I owned a Nintendo Virtual Boy back in the day. I was one of the early Oculus Quest purchasers. You know, when I think about this kind of experience of putting a giant, I call it the lunchbox factor, putting a giant lunchbox on your head and kind of waving your arms around in the air, people looking at you like you're crazy. I mean, we have a long way to go, really, where the consumer experience becomes one that people actually want to be seen participating in. And yet people are just very happy to, you know, log on their phone and quickly scroll to something and participate on a social media platform. So I really see one of the kind of big issues will be, how do we get consumers into this space in a way that, you know, attracts their attention, follows all the laws, and still has that cool factor that makes people want to participate? Because at the end of the day, people are still very self-conscious about what equipment they're putting on their bodies.
So, Ryan, you were just talking about the consumer experience, and I want to touch upon that because I think it's important, particularly important, again, thinking of someone like myself who is not someone who has typically been a gamer or really has been all that involved with Web 2.0. And I think there's a lot of folks out there that are like myself. And so the metaverse can seem just like this very confusing and a distant future. And so I think, you know, on our end as lawyers, of course, we're thinking about these legal issues and making sure that people can actually find a path forward. But I think thinking about this from a consumer perspective, I think the way that this will be more broadly accepted, and I think that is inevitable, is making it easy and easier, right, for those folks that have not been as involved in the gaming world or even in creation of user-generated content. And seeing, one, how is this useful to me? And two, what do I need to do to participate? And so I think that's what we're going to see from companies moving forward is a reduction in costs of the ability to participate. Perhaps the headsets and suits get less expensive over time and easier to purchase and easier to use. But I also think that the vocabulary and the way that people talk about it on a day-to-day basis will start to be more part of our world. And that is when I think consumers like myself will start to get even more involved. And kind of like we started with this conversation, seeing it as a new form of communication. Because for me, that's what's so exciting about the metaverse. As someone that's lived in several different places in the United States, this idea that I get to communicate so easily with friends and family all around the country or all around the world. And then also on top of that, get to communicate with folks that I've never met before and share stories and experiences in a new way. So that's what excites me about the metaverse. And I think companies are going to start working towards a world where it's easier for all of us to jump in.
And just to add some finishing thoughts on my end on that, I mean, I think the concept of what the metaverse is and will be is a developing one. And so whether it's an individual or a business looking to participate in it, it doesn't mean you have to go and purchase your plot of land in the virtual world tomorrow. Might not be a bad idea in some of these virtual worlds because they probably will become material parts of everyday experiences. But, you know, there are things like NFTs and DeFi and a number of other concepts and activities that are going on currently that are part of the metaverse. And I think participating in those activities can be the first steps for an individual or business in the metaverse as it develops so that you kind of have gotten your feet wet and begin to understand it.
Right. So, you know, the metaverse may come at you at different angles and you may be comfortable, for example, on the, you know, participating in some sort of decentralized metaverse version of finance before you are in terms of entertainment or whatever it is.
Exactly. And I think decentralization is here to stay. I think the concept of decentralization will begin to transcend a lot of our experiences in this world. So beginning to embrace it, I believe, is prudent for individuals and companies.
Well, that's really insightful, and I really want to thank you both for this conversation. That wraps it up for this episode of the DLA Piper Media Sports Entertainment podcast. I really hope our listeners enjoyed it. Please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast using your usual subscription platform and also register for our MSE Summit, which is taking place virtually towards the end of this year. Please visit dlapiper.com/MSE Summit to learn more about that. We hope you can join us, and of course, thanks for listening.